Shalom. This is Joshua Powell of Joshua Powell and the Great Train Robbery. Stay tuned for our small studio session coming up next.
I'm Melissa Davis, small studio producer. The following is the audio version of WFYI's latest small studio session featuring Joshua Powell. You can find the entire session, including a video, at WFYI.org/small studio. Stay tuned right after the session for an interview with Joshua and the band. Small Studio is made possible with support from Sun King Brewing.
Hi, we're Joshua Powell and the Great Train Robbery from Indianapolis, Indiana. We're going to start with a song called Mandala in Reverse from our most recent album, Psychotropic. It goes like this.
To wake up the neighbors to these things. Thank you.
Yeah, we like to talk about that song having a twist ending. It's like, oh, happy little bedroom dream pop song. And then we listen to Sabbath for like a whole year. This is Adam Shuntich on the guitar and singing. Josh Townsend on the bass. Mr. Ricky Yalmas on the keyboards. And this is our last month with our good friend Colin Oakley back here on the drums. So we're happy to get to memorialize this. Gonna play a song for you now off of the new album. For many years, I operated more as a folk singer. One of the things I was attracted to about that was the same spirit of integrity that I learned later to find in jazz, that I found earlier in punk, and that eventually I circled right back around and found in rock and roll. It was just this radical honesty, and but beyond that, sort of a social dynamic to what we make as artists and what our role is in the community. I get so sick of hearing criticism of artists who speak out about the things they believe in, and people say, oh, stick to music, which denies the humanity of the artist, which is the reason that you're connecting with the artist in the first place. And so for many years, I went around politically railing about everything I wanted to, until we stopped getting asked to play in Texas. A small joke, but not really. And I learned how to still find the balance and be able to say the things that I believe in, but couch them in enough reverb and metaphor so no one will get mad at us unless they really paid attention. So this is a political song that no one's caught on to yet. It's called 59 Tomahawk. So much. This is a huge treat for us. I mean, really, any day that we get to do this as work, it's the best. But aside from loving to play dreamy rock and roll with my friends, I'm a huge nerd for NPR. All things NPR. And, you know, Tiny Desk is super cool. So when they call us, you know, a couple months, like, okay, I guess Robin and Bob, sure. But in the meantime, I'm like, we don't need to go to D.C. We've got our own in Indianapolis. I love this. I love Small Studio. I love WFYI and all the other artists that have been on here. They have really good taste and us. So thank you so much for that. Find us online, Facebook and Instagram.com/Joshua Powell Music. On Twitter, it's twitter.com/Joshua Powell, GTR. That's the most unfiltered version, so... If you're already prone to not liking this, definitely don't follow me on Twitter. I'm going to play our last song from the very end of our new record. And the whole thing was a labor of love, but this song took on so many different incantations and incarnations in the studio, and wrote it about a friend who is experiencing the loss of their sight. And at least with the earthly eyes... This is a song about the other one. It's called Chakra Number 6. Thank you for having us in the small studio. I'm Joshua Powell.
I'm
you so much.
Yes.
Right on.
Thanks, guys, for playing our small studio today. If you could you introduce yourself and tell us the name of your band?
Yeah. We're Joshua Powell and the Great Train Robbery. I'm Joshua Powell. I sing and play guitar.
I'm Josh Townsend. I play bass.
I'm Ricky Olmos. I play keyboards and wear sunglasses indoors.
Could you tell me about the set that you played today and the songs and maybe why you chose those particular songs?
The songs that we picked for the studio session today were actually, I didn't realize until we were in the studio, the last three songs from the album. And it's not really structured like a classic album where your first song is the biggest banger and then your second song is the medium banger and you could bring it down for the third, but then you bring it back on the fourth. We really built the album in a way that's meant to like draw you in and take you on a whole series of crests and dips. And the last three are super different tonally, but do an interesting job of flowing into one another. And they were ones we've had a lot of wonderful opportunities recently to do other sessions, and we played on a bus and we've played in some other recorded environments, and we hadn't made a cool representation of what was happening with these songs live. And because they have become extrapolated since the album, we thought it would be cool to give these more, slightly more mellow, slightly more atmospheric tracks a chance to have a live incarnation and see the way that it sounded after we've been playing them out for a year.
Sounded amazing. You guys did a fantastic job. Wonderful. Okay, if you had to assign yourself a genre, what do you think it would be, or what subgenre would you be in? Or,
groovy neo doom wave. No, I'm just kidding. I think it's pretty succinct to say psychedelic indie rock, because rock means that we're going to yell and sweat. Indie means that there's reverb on it. And then psychedelic means that you know what it means.
I like the other description.
Stoner jams for English majors.
Nope, one more.
Neil Young songs played by Pink Floyd.
I like that. Like, that's the last one. If people don't know, they're like, I don't know. And then you say that, and they're like, oh.
Yeah, I say psychedelic indie rock dream pop. Be like, I'm like, you know, Neil Young.
What would you like, if you're looking back at your influences? Who would you say were maybe the top musicians that you love to listen to?
My holy trinity is Neil Young, Kanye West, and David Lynch. The Kanye one is obviously like can be controversial or anything else, and it's less about, obviously we don't sound like him usually
yet.
But the Kanye and Neil both have this incredible approach to their art where they don't care at all what we want from them, and it's not about the critical or commercial reception. No matter how problematic or you know, differentiated their output is, not all of Neil Young's records are great, but every single one of them is true. He has always just done what he wanted to do. And I think that commitment to your individuality and the whole scope of it is what makes them such like electric characters. And then David Lynch just taught me how to think about all art super differently and subvert all the most deep-seated Western tropes like the hero's journey or like a linear story. And that surrealist impression is something that we try to integrate into our music.
You talked a bit about your activism and art. Do you feel like some musicians maybe are nervous to go that way? Do you ever feel nervous to talk about political subjects in your art, or is that something that's important to you?
I have been nervous to talk about politics in an artistic context before, based on where we're traveling, right? There's certain songs that we have where they topically lend themselves to maybe saying a thing beforehand, enlightening some of the nuanced levels of the piece. But I made a joke about it during the session. Like, the first time I opened my mouth at a show in Texas, we could feel it in the room. However, that sort of lights the punk fire that's deep somewhere in my ribcage where I'm like, no, this is definitely where I'm going to talk about it. And I think there's a lot to be considered so far as like the empathy and the respect and the humility with which you approach these ideas. But the idea that an artist shouldn't speak out about the things they believe, whether or not they're related to their art, because like I'm a part of the community as well. I'm a citizen as well. And being given the platform to talk in front of people, even if it's just based on us making groovy sounds, it's like people are listening to you. And I think that it would be abdicating my responsibility as a citizen of the world and as like a friend to humanity that I aim to be, to not talk about those things that affect all of us, because that's the platform is there.
Well, kind of different time. How did you guys get together? How did this band form?
Me first? All right. I was and still am a total fan of the band and its music and its art and its vision. And that has changed very little, if anything. It's increased, you know, as I've become a part of the band and gained somewhat of a creative voice and just bond with, you know, these other guys in the band. But before that, total fan of the band, and I just cold messaged Joshua on the interwebs and said, hey, I love your music. Can I be in your band? And very hopeful and energetic. And he got back and he was like, hey, probably not. and then that continued. And I probably asked him, it was an annual tradition at the least for me to ask to be in his band for about 4 or 5 years.
Ricky, I'm trying really hard to be friends with you. Stop making it so awkward.
Then the sound morphed and evolved from a, you know, Americana folk band and kept those songwriting, you know, that songwriting core and storytelling core, but morphed musically into, you know, an entire different creature, another animal that included synthesizers and keyboards. And I got a call 2 years ago about from Joshua. Yeah. And so been rocking and rolling psychedelically since. Yeah.
Well, Joshua and I actually went to college together.
Sore, Raven, Sore.
Yeah. But oddly enough, in college, we both had our own different lives and our paths didn't cross very often. So post-college, I got into the corporate world and I did that for a few years. But music has always been something that I wanted to pursue as a career. And I made that choice. And oddly enough, the same day that I told my job that I was leaving, that I was going to pursue music full time, Joshua had a posting online that said they were looking for a new permanent bass player. And I was like, hey, I do that.
Boy, does he.
Yeah, I like you guys and your sounds. So that was about 2 years ago as well. Yeah.
It was the same season where we were building it out and you guys came. It's great. Adam and I also went to school together, our guitar player. He's been along the ride for 5 years. He was actually cutting out of college courses when I was, because he's behind a few years. Mm-hmm. So I would take him out on weekends and barely get him back to class on time. And then Colin Oakley, who's been with us for 2 years, he was in Cyrus Youngman and the Kingfishers, and he was in a couple other bands. So we were running the same scene. And then we linked up. We never hung out in Indy, and then we hung out in Appleton, Wisconsin, at Mile of Music one time. And then he came back. And within a month, he was my friend and my roommate and our drummer. Just really decided, like, I see an opening, and he took it. And it's been good.
Very cool. So did you all go to Anderson University?
Three of us went there.
Yeah. And then you made it was intentional to come to Indianapolis to do music.
I was on the road for a couple years after college. Really around the road, like almost 2 years of no address or anything. And tuckered myself out. I was not in good shape. 60 pounds over what you see now and a lot sadder. And so I was like, we need a place to grow. We need a central hub from which to work. I ended up back in Anderson for 2 years because my rent was $180. And it was easy enough to tour from there. But when we saw the way that Indianapolis was growing and we saw that it was sort of on the cusp of this maybe a renaissance was happening and it wasn't so oversaturated like your Nashville or your Austin. Like people seem to really know one another and support and is diverse and encouraging. And then it's literally the heart of the – it's the heart. I mean, we're in the middle of everything. We can go to 16 major music markets any weekend, and we do.
What do you think Indianapolis needs to sort of get us to that – I feel like we're almost there. What can the city do to support its musicians and artists?
I don't think that there's any one thing that pushes us to a national level on you talking about art cities. I think that it's Small Studio wasn't here 2 years ago, you know, and Jeff Nordyke and So Far Sounds wasn't doing as much as they were doing. And, you know, the Indigo, the Red Line Bus with their Music in Transit series, like none of those things. When I was in Anderson looking at Indy, we were like, well, why would we go to Indy this weekend? There's hardly anything going on there. And I think that, like, the progress of this city that I've been able to watch for the last few years has been so inspiring to me because I came from a small town in Florida where everyone is like, oh my God, I can't wait to get out. And here, not a celebrity feeling city. You know, it's not LA. It's gritty and it has its you know, flaws. It has its beauty. Sometimes you have to look for it. But the people who are here, as long as I've known this place, have believed in it and believed in themselves and believed in each other and decided we don't need to go to a cool place. We're going to make this cool. And so I think it's, you know, whatever the next small studio thing is that happens, you know, when somebody else has an idea, it's an amalgamation of all of those things working together. And a rising tide raises all ships. So,
would you give any advice to bands maybe moving to Indy or musicians just starting out how to gain a footing and be successful? No, nothing. Good luck.
I think one of the most important things for a band who is trying to grow into, you know, an institution, the first is you'll hear a lot of differing opinions on this, but I really don't think that you can replace what touring does for you. And it's hard and it's not glamorous. It's also the most fun thing in the entire world. But like, no one's going to do it for you. You have to learn yourself and you have to get your hands dirty and you have to book a lot of bad shows. But those get better and better. You know, we've played over 850 in the last 5 years in 42 states. We're very good now. Like, that's a byproduct of it. So you can't play that much together and not really hone your craft. But in a world where you're trying to like reach out for everyone you can digitally and make all these social media connections and stuff, there's still no matter how digitized our economy becomes or how commoditized streaming becomes, you can't replace the live experience and the emotional connection that you make with an audience when you are playing at a dive bar in Cleveland. And so I'd say, you know, don't be afraid of touring. Don't like save up money to go. Just start going on tour. And then the other thing is that when you're not on tour in your hometown, especially in Indianapolis, if there's a night where you're not playing a show, I think you should be at a show. I think that musicians supporting one another is where it starts, and other people won't catch on to. It's hard to compete when everyone has every movie of all time in their living room at all times. But the exchange that happens between an artist and an audience, between artists and artists, between audience members, like that's a holy thing that people are gathering to support one another. A human had an idea that was like, maybe other people will feel this. So rallying around those people and being a supporter in your scene not only is good for your scene, it is a way to foster goodwill for yourselves. If you're at people's shows, they're going to come to your shows, and everyone wins. It could be exhausting, but like, put your shoes back on, turn the TV off, go see a band. There's so many things happening in this town like every night. So